You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hey there, it's Blasco, and this is A New Level. Welcome to episode 5. My guest today is Scott Sokol. Scott is the president of Pinnacle Entertainment, a boutique booking agency with clients such as Slayer, Mastodon, and Hailstorm, to just name a few. Pinnacle also represents various TV properties for Adult Swim, such as my good friend Jackson Galaxy of My Cat from Hell. Scott is a longtime friend and colleague, and I am super stoked he took the time out of his day to chat with me today. Scott, thank you, my friend.
You're more than welcome. Happy to be here, and let's let it rock.
Yeah, I mean, so I was racking my brain trying to think how it is that we know each other, and obviously it's through Pinnacle. Whenever I first joined Rob Zombie's band in the late 90s, Pinnacle was the agent, and somewhere along the lines we met each other, and I don't exactly remember where.
As I say, I'm sure we probably met backstage at a Rob Zombie show, and then, you know, I think we've just known each other ever since. I think I've known you more as a manager than even when you were in the band we represented.
It's interesting that sometimes now that people don't even know that I play in a band.
You know? My favorite meeting with you was at the Revolver Awards, where it was you and Rudy Sarzo, my two favorite bass players for Ozzy Osbourne.
Nice. Which is so coincidental that he is my neighbor, right? So yep. Whenever I moved into the house and it was like, oh, there goes the neighborhood, two Ozzy Osbourne bass players on one block.
Totally.
So anyway, let's back it up. How did you get started in the music business?
When I was in college, I was actually doing two things. I was writing for the school newspaper, and I was booking bands into the school pub, which actually had live music twice a week. So between those two things, I was able to amass a lot of free CDs and free tickets, which was really the main goal. And after a while, I just started going to the shows and talking to the musicians and talking to the people in the industry that were hooking me up with the tickets and the CDs to do the reviews. And as I was getting ready to graduate, one of the artists that I had become friends with said to me, hey, we have a publicist in New York. You should go work for her. And at the same time, one of the bands that I had been friendly with was Mother Love Bone. And their person in New York was also giving me some advice. And she said to me, you don't want to do what I do. She's like, this job sucks. So she said, she's like, what do you like? And I said, I really like the live side of things. I like going to the shows and, you know, watching the bands, that whole thing. She's like, you probably want to be an agent. And I know an agent who's starting an agency. You should talk to him. And so for about 6 months, I worked with John Dittmar and Pinnacle Entertainment part-time. And the other part-time, I was doing publicity. And the publicist actually happened to be the publicist for the Ramones. So I was in seventh heaven with that. And then after about 6 months of just running myself ragged, trying to work two jobs, it became very apparent that the publicity side of things was, as an independent publicist, you were basically working for anybody who would give you a paycheck. And I can remember, and I want to say it might have been Ray Waddell, but I could be wrong, is that at Billboard said to me one day when one of these bands that was just terrible was I was having to get reviews for. And he said to me, you know what? If you could honestly tell me that you like this band, that there's something good about this band, then I'll write a story. I want you to honestly tell me something good about this band. And I couldn't. And that's when I knew, I think I was no longer destined to be a publicist. And with Pinnacle, it's basically you could sign whatever you wanted, but it just better work because you're the only way you could earn a living was to sign bands that other people like too. So you better have good taste, and you know, and then it would work. So we had two bands. It was that John had from a previous agency. It was Savatage and Badlands.
Wow.
And And after 6 months, I said, well, this is the side I want to see. This is the where I want to be, the live side. It's sink or swim. The publicist had been in business for a long time. She had been Kiss's publicist for a while and everything else. And the agency was 6 months old. So, and I just winged it. And it was like, okay, this is it. And we had, shortly thereafter, we signed two bands that had just gotten record deals. One was called The Spin Doctors, and the other was called Pantera. And they were both great live bands in their own genre. And we just basically had to keep our fingers crossed. And slowly but surely, The Spin Doctors grew a following. And the same thing with Pantera. And then both of those two bands started to take off. The Spin Doctors started having hits. They grew a following all over the country where they were doing 1,000 people a night with nothing going on. And then we started a letter writing campaign to the record label, actually, for them, where we had different promoters and the local radio stations writing letters to Epic Records to say, hey, this band is fantastic. Can you service me with a single? And we had enough people writing those letters that they decided to service a single, which I believe was Two Princes at that point, and it started to become a hit. And then on the Pantera side of things, Pantera, we got them on tour. It was Suicidal Tendencies, Exodus, and Pantera. And I remember they played the Ritz in New York. Pantera was a brand new band at this point. We knew what was coming. The audience didn't know what was coming, but we knew what was coming. And I don't even remember if the record was out at that point, like their first record for ATCO at that point in time. But they hit the stage, and it took one song for the place to explode. And you could see the crowd reaction for Pantera versus the crowd reaction for Exodus and Suicidal, who people actually bought tickets to see. And they just killed them. And that was the beginning. Those two bands just exploded after that.
Now, how long have you been at Pinnacle now?
28 years this month, actually.
28 years. So in 28 years, what would you consider your greatest achievement?
You know what? I think they're still going. I mean, right now, you know, last time out, Robin, who's another one of her clients, was headlining and selling out sheds and arenas. And right now, Slayer, after representing them for 20 years, is headlining and selling out sheds and arenas, the biggest tour they've ever done. So, I mean, I was basically at the beginning of one of the highlights of my career just the other day, where it was just so exciting for a band that you've worked on for so long, because we've had bands that have exploded and done whatever, you know, and headlined arenas and sheds, and it's great, don't get me wrong, but it hasn't been like a slow 20-year build.
Let me get your opinion on this. So I'm currently on the Ozzy Osbourne Farewell Tour, and you're currently just starting the Slayer Farewell Tour, right?
Yes.
So you've got a lot of legends, you know, starting their retirement this year. What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's a hard genre of music to really play. I mean, you've got, you know, with Ozzy, he's getting older. How old is he? Like around 70 or so?
Mm-hmm.
In that neighborhood?
Yeah.
And it's hard to sing those things and go out there night after night and play hard rock and roll where they expect you to run around and play heavy and do all those things. And I think Slayer, I mean, they're the epitome of heavy. They're the heaviest band there is.
Yeah. Are you confident, you know, as the Ozzys and Slayers and Sabbaths of the world retire, are you confident that we've got the next wave of headliners on deck ready to take that responsibility?
Am I confident that there are 40-year-olds that are ready to replace the 50-some-odd-year-olds? Yes. Am I confident that there are any teenagers right now getting ready to replace the Slayers and the Black Sabbaths of the world? No. I haven't seen much that would lead me to believe that this, you know, there's a band out there of teenagers that has a teenage following, which is really where it all started, that's going to replace it. And it's kind of frightening. I think there is another, or concerning, I should say. I think there's another generation behind the current one that's there, but they're already in their late 30s and 40s. I just don't see any teenagers or 20-year-olds that are really at a certain level that are playing hard rock that's going, you know, it's going to have mass appeal in the metal world.
Yeah. Okay. So It's kind of awesome. Your greatest achievement is still in front of you, right? Which I totally respect. So conversely, what about one misstep that you encountered along the way that maybe you learned something from?
I would say that some of my biggest misstep might be just taking some things personal, that somewhere, you know, that you get yourself so invested in an artist that when things, you know, whether they have a falling out with their manager or they have, you know, so they want to just clean house or falling out with their label or whatever, and things change, that you take it personally. And that's the one thing that I probably regret early. I mean, I don't as much anymore. Now I know it's okay. It's business. If people aren't going to do the right thing, you can't agonize over it. You just got to deal with it and go and just continue on. But I would say that's probably the one thing. It's like, okay, I can't take, you know, when I'm recommending we go left and the artist says, no way, we're going right. And I know it's not going to work just because I've seen the story so many times. Not that I'm much smarter than anybody else. Just I've seen the story play out 100 times and it always has the same ending. And you just get so bummed out. And it's like, you know what? You just got to go, okay, they're just going to do it. There's nothing you can do to, you know, you've done everything you try to do, change everybody's mind. And you just got to go for it.
What is your best piece of advice for someone who is working towards a career in the music business?
To just try and get in as early as possible. I mean, it seems to me that most people that have been successful and been around for a while have really started at the bottom, as they say, in the mailroom. Not that there's mailrooms anymore. In the mailroom, bottom rung, if you're coming out of high school or coming out of college, see if you can intern. See if you could just, you know, just hammer people about, you know, if you want to work at Atlantic Records, if you want to work for RSE Management, if you, you know, or any of these things, just hammer these people and just tell them you're really willing to do it. You're willing to work for free. You want to learn. And there it is. I don't think there's much more that, you know, you can do. And I'm not aware of too many people that haven't been, you know, that have been around a long time that haven't done that.
Would you put some stock in that it's good to start early because maybe what you think is going to be your final destination ends up not being the case? Meaning that I first started as a musician and that's what I wanted to do, right? And I did that for a while. I still do that. But at that time, I never thought that I was going to end up where I ended up. And to get to management actually took me a couple of missteps. I wanted to maybe be a producer. I wanted to be an A&R guy. And then it's interesting hearing your story where it was like you sort of straddled the line between agent and publicist for a while, right? So it's like you kind of, you didn't know. You had to get in there and kind of feel it out and to get to the end game of where, you know, what it is that you were actually felt most comfortable in, right?
Right.
What is your unique strength?
I would like to think it's creativity. I will sit there. The thing that I enjoy the most is trying to put together something that people haven't seen before. And it's putting together a package or a show or a group of artists that people would go, okay, I've never seen that. Or that is, you know, these days, artists are on the road a lot more frequently than when I started. So, you know, because of the declining record sales, the only way for artists to have income is to stay out on the road and to try and put together the must-see bill each month. That's the most fun for me. I mean, a couple of examples of what we currently have going on is the Hailstorm is out there and it's an all-female fronted package. So it's Hailstorm and In This Moment and New Year's Day. And the thing is doing slam in business and Hailstorm doesn't even drop an album until the 1st of August and a single doesn't come till around the 1st of June. But it's just something so unique that people are like, okay, it stands out. People are talking about it. And the average rock show has a female attendance of 10%, 15% if you're lucky. And that show, that tour, and this is backed up by Ticketmaster statistics, is 50% women. And it's just like creating your own, you know, fan base. Creating your own niche and just expanding upon it. They have the rock fans, but now we're bringing in the females. And I love the fact that together with Indigo, we were able to do different things with them. For instance, not only are we doing this all-female package now, but we've done evening with tours where the band plays two sets for 2 hours. They've gone out and supported Avenged Sevenfold, but they've also gone out and supported Eric Church for two tours. And they've done stuff with Lindsey Stirling. You know, so it's they've kind of straddled a whole bunch of different genres so they didn't get pigeonholed and just doing stuff like that. Or, you know, we work with Mastodon, and Mastodon's out there. They go out in their headline, and they've supported Slayer, and they've supported Metallica, and they've supported Tool, which are more obvious things. But right now, they're out there on a co-bill with Primus. And then they're going to take out Dinosaur Jr. And they just figured – they just finished taking out Eagles of Death Metal. So they're just trying to do different things. And I love the fact that the band's open to trying different things. You know, and we worked very hard with RSE to put together those packages and make those things fly to even the Slayer package this summer, where we saw a definite, you know, hole in the true metal genre. So we put together what I felt and RSE and the band felt was the most metal package you could get. So it's Slayer and Lamb of God, Anthrax, Behemoth, Testament, and Napalm Death, you know, on some of it as well. And it's just, it doesn't get any more metal than that.
Right. What are you most fired up about right now?
Well, I mean, as far as the music stuff goes, it feels like, especially this year, that things are turning around, that there's certain artists that play guitar where things are starting to come back, where there was definitely the talk of rock is dead for the last couple of years. But we're seeing it on every rock tour that we're working on right now, dramatically increased numbers. And I think also part of it is there's a lot of – what I'm also excited about is that a lot of artists are willing to cross genres and not just pigeonhole themselves, and therefore they can grow. I think things like Spotify, you know, Apple Music, all the streaming stuff is very exciting because it's so easy for people to find out about new music. I mean, I think one of the things that killed record sales was – bands being signed where you get excited, you hear a song on the radio or whatever, and you go out and buy the record and there's only one good song on it. You've got nine piles of crap. And I think people just got burned by that so many times that they just gave up on buying those albums or whatever. But I think now with streaming, they can check it out for themselves. I think it puts pressure on the artists and the labels to actually have a solid album's worth of material for people to get excited about. I think it's putting more power in the hands of the artist. Like if you have good music, you can put it up there and be just as, you know, you don't have to have that that front rack at Best Buy and have your album on sale at $5.99. You could be up at Spotify and just have, you know, have it spread word of mouth that your album's there and people will find it. And the same thing with social media. If you've got a great live show, even if there's 20 people at the show, it doesn't take that long for people to find out. People will find out quickly if you've got a great live show, and bands, you know, especially rock bands will benefit from that. That's what I'm excited about. And being able to use social media to help promote the shows that we're working on and to help market them. I mean, we really, you know, we're living in an age where we don't have to, you know, just buy expensive spots on radio and TV to sell a show. You can buy stuff, you know, or you can get word of mouth going on your own Facebook page, on your own Instagram account, and just go from there. And it's not that expensive to do, and it's not that hard to get going.
What is your one prediction for the future of the music business?
I think right now, I think we're starting to see an oversaturation on the festival scene. And I think that's going to, that nonstop growth we've probably been seeing for the last 10 years, I think that's gonna, you know, hit a peak, if not this year, then pretty soon. I think there's good, you know, and for all these different festivals and whatnot and different touring things to survive, I think there's just gonna have to be more diversity. I think that the rock genre is gonna have to be accepting, you know, as accepting as they are of, you know, of artists like Seether and 3 Days Grace that are on the radio, those same people really have to accept things like Muse and the Foo Fighters and things that wouldn't necessarily be typical active rock bands. And I think there's, you know, you see a lot of bands breaking through that are different. You see bands like Hailstorm, like Greta Van Fleet, like Ghost, that just don't sound like any of the other bands out there that are really starting to break through. And it gives me a lot of hope that rock is about to make a return. And, you know, and hopefully cross genres, that the fans of Muse could also be fans of Eric Church, that could be fans of Hailstorm, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because right now, how many stadium rock headliners are there that are under the age of 40? I can't think of any.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a step back, right? Hypothetical. Scott Sokol and Pinnacle Entertainment are open to taking on young, developing heavy metal bands. What qualities do you look for in a new client in this case?
Just quality and originality. It's got to sound different. They have to have multiple songs, and they have to have, even if it's just in one town, they have to have a following. I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. A lot of bands back in the day, and that day might have been 5 years ago, that people don't understand. If the band doesn't have a following in their own hometown, how are they going to get a following anywhere else? So, I mean, that would be the key, is just to looking for bands with a little bit of a following, a little bit of a buzz, as it were, and some great music, great songs.
When you guys were in that room and you were seeing Pantera play for the first time to 12 people stage diving from the stage to the floor, right? Like, then it was something, it was a gut instinct. What you saw, you and John were like, this is some of the most amazing shit I've ever seen, right? Like these guys are going to kill people, right? So, but nowadays, right? How much stock do you put in something like what a band has in terms of followers, in terms of views? Because they can, would it be a necessity that they've booked some shows on their own outside of their hometown? Maybe some small little tours to where you guys can actually see some analytics. You can see some numbers that maybe they're worth 100 people, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles outside of their hometown to put in that work. Is that beneficial?
It's 100% beneficial. And it one, to get yourself noticed, and two, to really get things, you know, just get the ball rolling. Because one thing we've definitely seen a lot, and it's more in the rock genre than almost any other, is just because you have, you know, a million views on YouTube or 100 views on YouTube, it almost doesn't correlate to anything. You know, same thing with, you know, with listens on Spotify. There's no rock artist that has the Justin Bieber sort of listens on Spotify or plays on Spotify, but there's a lot of rock artists that can go out there and headline arenas. It's one of those things where it's tough. Like all the, you know, you're getting thrown analytics left, right, and center with social media, with, you know, the different streaming things, but it's really, you got to be able to call, you know, the promoter in Albuquerque and see how the band from Albuquerque is drawing. That's really the only way to tell. Will people actually plunk down, you know, $20 to go see a band? It doesn't cost anything to watch a video on YouTube or on the free level to listen to a song on Spotify, but it does cost money to go out, spend your time to go see a show. And if you can get someone to plunk down $20 to go see you, then you've got a real fan. You know, we have a new artist called New Year's Day. It's out there with Hailstorm right now. They've this is their first sort of touring in that straight ahead rock genre. They're, you know, one thing we're looking for is we're getting feedback from the promoters that they're great. They sold out all their merchandise, you know, very quickly in the tour. So people are responding. So we think we've got something here. They're working on an album and everything else. And we're just very excited that we can feel little things that you feel for a new band that's going to break. They're starting to exhibit some of those signs.
What would be a new level for you?
A new level would still be doing this with the same artists, growing them to arena size status and above 10 years from now, to continue doing what I'm doing. You know, each day I come in here, I write my own script. What do I want to work on? What do I want to do? What's interesting to me? How can I, booking the dates, I've done it long enough. It's something that you just, I don't know, it's in my nature at this point to be able to do. It's challenging myself to find that right partner for a tour. The Slayer had the Toyota Corporation through Scion built a Slayer mobile that toured all the car shows. And Scion and Toyota got behind and helped promote the tour. That was fantastic. You know, doing stuff like that that's sort of outside of the box. You know, working really hard to get Hailstorm on a Budweiser commercial to get their music exposed, which is still their biggest streamed and single sales to date, was that song that was on that commercial, even though they have since then had two records that went gold and won a Grammy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. To even just Mastodon and getting the extra push and some of the video stuff online from Pabst, who sponsored two of their last tours, and just doing things like that and just trying to bring in or do things a little bit differently, trying to make things a little bit more interesting, you know, kind of like what you had mentioned before or earlier in the podcast, is working with Adult Swim and putting on tour everything from Death Clock to Mr. Pickles, who were about to announce launch FLCL, to going to and working with Animal Planet and Jackson Galaxy and putting him out there. And he just did his first round of spoken word dates, and it went down a storm. I would want to do more of that. Just doing things. I guess it's one of those things where I'd like to think we have a fairly diverse roster because I get bored easily. I don't like having a bunch of bands that all sound exactly the same. It's not as, you know, I like a challenge. I guess that's really it. To feel like still being creative and still being able to do that, do the job that I love doing, and just building the bands to the next level, building the artists to the next level.
You know, it's interesting and refreshing to hear the passion in your voice of how much love that there is for the artist and the amount of work and creativity and innovation you put into packages and how involved you are in the artist's careers as a whole, right? Because I think that on the surface level, people probably think that being an agent is just spreadsheets, right? It's picking up the phone and hustling a promoter to take a show. You know what I mean? I think that people potentially view the role of the agent as a member of the team as potentially a relatively boring, non-creative job. Right. And you're presenting something that is completely opposite and eye opening. And I just want to say that I find that refreshing.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you do. And like I said, otherwise I would get bored and then I wouldn't do this anymore. If I didn't have that ability to try and help in other ways, if I can. And obviously everything that I do is always done hand in hand with the artist, management, et cetera. But I'd like to think, I always tell the artist this, I'll bring 10 ideas to the table. 9 of them will just be impossible to pull off. But that one idea that we can pull off hopefully helps.
Okay, Scott, my very last question. This is a doozy.
All right.
Living or dead, who are the members of your ultimate supergroup?
I'd have to say, and this is one thing that I never got to see, and this is the thing that I would love to see, it would be Randy Rhoads, Ozzy Osbourne, Tommy Aldridge, Rudy Sarzo.
That is
on
not
the Diary of a Madman tour.
Yeah, the castle.
The castle.
Yes. Well, Scott, thanks for chatting with me today. Where can our listeners find you on the social medias?
I usually don't have much time to spend on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. So I sometimes pay attention to it, but I'll be honest with you, I don't pay attention. I don't really promote myself on those type of things.
What's the Pinnacle website?
I believe it's pinnacleentertainmentinc.com.
There you go, kids. All right. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate you taking the time, my friend.
You're welcome.
A New Level podcast is brought to you by Musicians Institute. Headphones provided by Monster Products. Editing and music by Blake Bunzel. Logo design by Mango Beard. I produced this show with my managemental co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry for Jabberjaw Media. Email me questions or comments at askblasco@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.